You're listening to Notes for the Apocalypse on KHOL, coming at you out of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I was joined by artist Travis Walker, and also a few little tidbits and commentaries from one of his visiting artists from Australia, Charlie Donaldson. Do you want me to call you Travis?
Nobody's listening to this that I know. Nobody is listening.
41 people listen. I think 7 of them are my mom listening to it 7 times, but oh, we're fine great. With it. Okay.
I'm going to link this to everyone that I know in Brisbane.
See? So. Okay. We're just all here to talk about, well, grief for one thing. We've talked a lot about how to make a relationship work, what independence within a relationship looks like, what happens when you're expecting a baby within a relationship, but we haven't touched on what happens when a relationship comes to an end, or when a friendship comes to an end, or when a life comes to an end, and we're going to kind of just explore that. Thanks for joining me.
Let's do it.
No Let's worries. Do it.
Sounds
Let's
great.
Just go for it.
Yeah. In terms of a relationship ending, how do you know when it's time to move on versus when it's time for hard work?
Well, I've been in a relationship for 20 years, and, you know, I've thought, you know, I think anytime you're in a relationship for a long time, there's going to be points where you it's not work. It's just really natural, and it's just fun, and you know, and it can go on like that forever, it seems like. But, you know, life comes at you hard, and you know, we all know the apocalypse is coming, and you know, death and all this mayhem is going to hit our lives at some point. So it does become work when that stuff starts happening, and you know, work can be fun too. I like my job, but when you're in a relationship, you don't want it to feel like a job. You want it to be something, or, you know, if you do have a job, you want to be passionate about it. You want to like really love it. And a relationship's so much like that. It's like, you know, you can think you have your dream relationship, just like you can think you have your dream job on the outside. But, you know, once the apocalypse starts happening, and you figure out if it's work or not, and if you love the work you're doing. And if you don't, you move on.
That line is so blurry to me. It's so hard to distinguish for me.
Yeah. I don't think anybody has like the gift at knowing when that moment is. I think it's, in retrospect, it's much easier to see it. You know, you can look back and be like, that was it. It was meant to be. But when it's happening, when life's falling apart, it does not make any sense. It's you know, you're in like, you have your mind in two different worlds, you know, or more. I think as you get older, you just get, you know, you get used to never figuring it out. You just realize like 20 years from now it's gonna make sense, or 5 years from now maybe it'll make sense, sometimes even a month. Mm-hmm. You know, especially death can be like that, where it like very quickly after death you can start to like see, you know, bluebirds and stuff and think they're your dead friend and feel happy and you're fine again. But relationships aren't quite like that, especially if they end poorly.
And I guess we kind of go through in our everyday lives as kind of small apocalypses that happen every time that we go through a really traumatic event. It's just the kind of thing that happens every time we go through something like that. And it's the kind of thing that it's kind of preparing us for anything that's kind of bigger than that. And
micro apocalypse.
Yeah,
we have
micro-apocalypse.
It's
a great way to phrase it. Yeah,
tremors, I guess.
My first one, I guess, was my first love was a guy that I was really in love with, and just kind of it fell apart very quickly because he was definitely not as into me as I was into him. And it kind of like he lied to me for a long time that he was like, yeah, you know, I'm into whatever's happening, and I'm not really into being with someone at the time. And then I found out after a couple of months of just being very infatuated with this guy that he was just sleeping with a lot of people, like a lot of people, and he hadn't told me. And I confronted him about it, and just kind of it all fell apart from there. Just kind of the curtain dropped, and that was it. Like that was the end of it. And for me, that was like my first experience with having my heart broken and just kind of being like mentally and physically destroyed as a person. I was just kind of, it took me 2 years to bounce back from that. I was so destroyed. It was a really big thing for me. It's
But it makes sense now. I mean, you probably, your life would have sucked if you'd been with that guy.
Yeah, no, it definitely would have. Like, yeah, he's not a great person.
He's a not a great person.
Glad it's done.
So when you have those first traumas or the traumas, do you guys still notice them showing up for you in the next relationship or your friendships? And how do you kind of quell the fears that arise based on previous experience versus what you should be afraid of?
I feel like you can't. It's just there. It's the kind of thing that it always exists, and you just really have to try and learn from it if you can. It's always there in the back of your head, the way that you've been hurt before. And you always just kind of really have to kind of tackle that obstacle as it comes when it pops into your head, when you've really made a new friendship or a new relationship, that you really need to just kind of deal with it as it comes. And if you can, it's great. If you can't, then it's a bad thing. But it's really just the way of the world.
Like, have your perspective of the situation and then have another viewpoint of like, okay, here's where my old stuff is coming up for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really just comes down to the battle between those two viewpoints.
Every wrong turn, every like nasty thing someone says to you, every like rejection in your life, or, you know, it all stays with you forever. Mm. And it's really important that you never forget it.
Absolutely.
And not just in a relationship. I mean, we get rejected from all sorts of stuff. I'm an artist, and people don't always like what you make. And sometimes people really close to you that don't like what you make, and it can feel like, like breaking your heart in a way, like on a small level. And you can never forgive somebody sometimes for just the wrong thing they said about this, you know, painting you made for fun. And it can be devastating, and you know, every breakup has, there's a reason for the breakup. The best people can just kind of move on in their life, and, you know, just it doesn't affect them, maybe, or not the best people, but maybe the least empathetic. You always have all those people in the back of your mind, and you always, always love people. You can be in love with so many people in your life, I believe. I can go back to high school and still feel like love for certain people. They were just so beautiful, and you take it with you your whole life, hopefully. I mean, that's why you're alive. You don't live life to be a collection of sorrow. I think you have to really, you know, focus on the love and why you love people and why people are, you know, why we're connected at all in this life. Because ultimately, you're going to meet the right person down the line. You're going to think about the things maybe you did wrong in the past and the things that you want. You're going to really appreciate that person more maybe than these other lovers you've had that we're learning our whole lives and screwing it up.
You're giving me a lot to unpack here. One of my teachers says that your issues are in your tissues. Like, even if you're not carrying it mentally, it'll show up in your body. And you might have a reaction that you can't even feel or hear in your inner monologue. But why do you think that you will meet the right person? What's that about?
If you want something bad enough, you really can make it happen. It may not be the thing ultimately when you get that thing that you thought you wanted, that thing that you had in your mind, whether it's a woman or a job or whatever it is you've just been dreaming about. When you get that, sometimes there's still something missing, and you don't often know what that is until later in your life. Maybe some people are lucky enough to have it all figured out when they're, you know, 25 or whatever, but I don't know now if you do ever figure it out. I think all the people you meet and fall in love with, all the mistakes you make, it just adds up to, you know, when you're old and, you know, thinking about all your whole life, you've really truly felt love, and you felt, you know, lost too, because you don't understand love without that. You don't, you know, like they say, you don't appreciate the sunshine without the rain. It's the most basic thing in life, but it's so true. If you don't go through bitter rejection, you can never truly feel love, I don't think. I think everyone needs to, you know, to really understand what pain feels like sometimes, just to know how good love can be too.
For contrast.
Yes, exactly.
So you kind of talked about people giving negative feedback to your artwork, which feels like the most personal physical representation of your inner self. What about if we're so busy and caught up in the flow of things that there's not even enough time to honor each other's creations? Have you guys ever encountered that?
Oh, totally. I mean, you can take anything for granted so easily. Like,
yeah,
Charlie's
absolutely.
Here for a month. You know, he's we'll be together, not even a month, but 20 more days. And
19 now.
You know, like, it's easy to be, you know, you can meet somebody really amazing and fall in love with them in a matter of minutes, I think. You just know where it's headed, and the more time you spend with them. You know, some people you really, really, truly do appreciate in that regard. But some people, like, until they're gone, you don't have a sense for the space they occupied. It's like you can't ever fully appreciate it. You know, like, I had a friend that died last month, and we were together all the time. He went away for a year, but I saw him all the time for like 12 years, you know. And when you're in that kind of relationship with anybody, you take them for granted. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's like, look at when a musician dies, you know, like, everybody is listening to their music nonstop. Like, when George Michael died whenever that was, everybody was listening.
Yeah, I forgot that happened.
It's so hard to truly love somebody in the way that they deserve to be loved when they're with you. It's just a great challenge in life. And I think keeping that going is just incredibly hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to give up at some point on something. Very few people are strong enough to just, you know, go the distance and keep it going. You know, I think you sent me a message talking about how things, like, if 50% of airplanes were crashing, they would reinvent the airplane, right?
Yet here we all are.
It's just part of life.
You're listening to Notes for the Apocalypse on KHOL. I'm Cassandra, and I spoke with artist Travis Walker. We were also joined by a visiting artist named Charlie Donaldson, who chimed in here and there. So another question I have is, in the midst of losing a friend or a marriage coming to an end, which you happen to be going through both, how do you find people react to you differently? How do they respond to kind of where you're at?
Everybody's senses are heightened, and, you know, their love sensor is like, you know, just it's easier for people to let you in when there's sadness, or like it's easier, like, for example, if you've been like had gone through a devastating breakup and you're just crying all the time, people treat you differently. They love you more than they did maybe the day before.
Or they're willing to be more raw with you.
Yeah, they see you in a raw space, and all of a sudden they're telling you some story that you never heard before, and then you're bonding on some level you never expected. You know, I met these guys a couple weeks ago that had been buying my paintings for a long time, and I didn't really know them, but they knew I was going through some rough times, and they invited me to go out to dinner with them because they just happened to be in town. And then one of the guys happened to be this caregiver for people with terminal illnesses. Wow. And he was just this incredibly passionate guy and compassionate man. He was the best listener I've had in so long. It was just, you know, these strangers to me that love my paintings, maybe, that didn't really know who I was, were connecting with me because I was like, you know, I'd only been out, seen them a few times, but I was crying now in front of them, and they were treating me like I was family or a dear friend, and instantly, just because I was so raw. And it was just really beautiful experience for me, because people, you know, yeah, you just take everyone for granted in life. It sucks. You want to go around telling everybody how much you love them all the time, but it just doesn't happen. You know, you can beat yourself up about that when all of a sudden somebody dies out of nowhere and you're like, Jesus Christ, I should have told them I loved them yesterday. Even when my friend died, first thing I did was got on Instagram. Every social media account, he said, you know, I just wanted to just tell him I loved him and just send him a message. And you find peace in that, even though you're really sad.
It ties into what we talked about of like, do people always take the time to look at what you're creating? Well, you're no matter what, you're leaving this trail.
Yeah.
And people cling to it. So, I mean, they're searching for these crumbs of identity after a person has left. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking, but it really is a beautiful legacy for people to enter into and explore and reside within while they're grieving.
Totally.
Absolutely.
The,
yeah.
The last, there's a, you know, the last work of art that an artist makes before he dies, or like the work that's on the easel the day he dies, is very interesting to me. I've been obsessed with that. Like Van Gogh, everyone knows who Van Gogh is, but before he died, you know, he was starting to lose his mind and he was going through a lot of depression and just struggling so much. He was in an insane asylum. And then, you know, his paintings started to take on this really dark character. There was dark clouds in the sky. His brushwork became really just aggressive and erratic. And then the last painting he ever made was Wheatfield with crows and these just ominous clouds and these like dark crows, just, which, as we all know, crows are a symbol of death in many cultures.
I've been seeing those a lot lately.
There's a lot of crows in town, but
it could just be your neighborhood in Jackson. Ravens.
Even Ravens. Just deer just kind of staring at me from a distance. That's kind of terrifying.
We have that.
It's a bit of an omen.
Yeah, you can definitely read wildlife encounters as omens for sure. I also wonder, you know, you said you had this deep connection with people who were attracted to your paintings already. And I wonder if that's just, you know, they see something in your work, your brushstrokes, your way of creating that they relate to already. So it's natural that you would get along when you're in the setting of interpersonal connection. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, not everyone, I don't think everyone that likes my paintings likes me necessarily, if they got to know me. And I think that's just normal. I think if you knew what most directors are really like that make movies, you would probably hate most of them. Or, you know, it's just artists are crazy a little bit. And
more than other humans?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a stat on that necessarily, but I think so. I think they are good crazy. I do think that the crazy part is what generates your ideas. Like, where does a song come from? I mean, you hear voices in your head literally sometimes. Where does the idea for any artwork come from? You're hearing voices, and they may not be mouthing words necessarily, but they're telling you to get off your ass and make something. And occasionally, you know, there will be a symbol in my painting, like a house or a burning RV or, you know, a road that just kind of goes off into the distance that will connect with them. They may maybe invest more in that symbol than I intended. And maybe if they meet me and ask me about, like, the burning RV, for example, a burning anything is kind of it's destructive and it's a very powerful image. And a burning RV, you know, it symbolized personal tragedy. It symbolized like the loss of my own personal American dream. But everyone else looks at it and sees Breaking Bad.
So within grief, the unfortunate, inevitable land of grief, have you been surprised by, or what have you found that gives you solace? I know you play basketball, obviously you paint. What makes you feel at least a smidgen better?
Well, you just listed the only two things right now. besides basketball and painting, I really enjoy my family, seeing my kids, watching them become artists, become little humans. That informs a lot of my work and informs a lot of my ideas about life at this point.
What do they do specifically that kind of gives you perspective?
Well, they, you know, they invent their own worlds like a lot of children do. But when you're a child, you're not as influenced by what people think about your work, your young work, you know.
Or even just who you are standing there in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. You can just be in your underwear covered in paint and markers and, you know, 50 people walk in and you won't care. you're not self-conscious. And, you know, watching my children make things helps me, just reminds me that you can never let go of your inner child as an artist. It's the thing that really makes all of your art. It's the thing that really, you know, you have to protect your inner child, because when you lose that, you lose your excitement about life. You know, everybody wants to just keep doing the same thing day after day, going to the same job. You know, this country just makes you think that's the way it is, you know, a career. But kids don't have any sense of that. They just live, and you know, they put things together logically, and, you know, they build these worlds, but they don't really worry about what's going to happen necessarily to the tomorrow or, you know, all the real stuff. It's just amazing, because when you're in that mindset, you can really make great work. Like when you can protect yourself from a lot of this noise, the criticism, the fear, the doubt that people are going to hate what you're making, or they're not going to laugh at your joke, or whatever it is that keeps you from doing it. You don't think about that when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. Once you forget that, that's why people stop making art, because I think we all make art when we're little, right? Right?
Yeah. And I mean, do you have a sense of who your inner child is still? Is there some kind of like eternal flame of your childness that you can still contact?
Yes. I mean, for me, the thing I always go back to in my life is I love like fantasy novels. I love like other world type stuff. I can get lost still, just like I did when I was a child, in a book or a movie or my, you know, any kind of drawing, anything really, where you just want to start from scratch. You know, like a fresh white piece of paper to a child is incredible.
Something that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Yeah.
You just, the potential, so much potential in the world.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, it's obvious, you know, just everything is new and fresh, and nobody's had their hearts broken, and you don't know about AIDS or cancer or whatever. And then, you know, once you start thinking about all that stuff, you start getting scared. You know, you don't want to get into that piece of paper world anymore. That blank piece of paper has always represented an opportunity for change for me in my life.
I kind of just imagine it as we all have access to the blank piece of paper, but the longer we're here on the earth, the more, to use terminology from modern television, the more the underneath of the piece of paper gets darker and deeper and, you know, slimier and full of more monsters.
Yes.
And can you like step up onto the top surface and see that blank page again?
Yeah, start over.
Yeah.
You know? Can you just, you can't. It's really hard. I think some people have a real talent for getting into that space. And, you know, for me, my studio is a lot about that, and just being able to control my environment. And, you know, if you're surrounded by a lot of things that make you happy and you focus on that, you can get pretty far. I think as you get older, it's harder and harder because everyone's dying and, you know, everything's breaking and whatever. But I think you can still get there. I heard like Leonard Cohen's last album. Basically, every artist's last album that I've heard in the last few years is incredible. The emotion you can still channel. And I wonder, you know, sometimes what they're thinking when they're making this stuff. Are they able to step back and still feel that like excitement about what they just made, but knowing that they're going to be gone soon? Like, I think so, actually. Actually, I think it's even more intense, I hope. I'm living my life imagining that like in the end, you know, you want to be productive as an artist your whole life. You don't want to retire. You want to be like crafting this amazing last album or painting that when you die, they find it in the potato barn. And holy crap, I can see David Bowie and Johnny Cash and all those people that put out that last album that blew everyone's mind just up there, like just loving it. You know, I hope it's possible to still be excited about stuff when you're on the way out, is to still be like optimistic somehow.
Yeah. It reminds me of something you said in our first interview, which was the kind of depth and chaos in the simplicity of your work. And I think a lot of the time the last album or the last work comes off as simple, but there's such depth and understanding in that simplicity. It's like you've gone back to what you used to know and then you remembered it through your experience.
Yeah. As you get older, I think life empties out a bit. You see, I always like to talk about Willem de Kooning, who developed Alzheimer's in his 40s and 50s, and it got progressively worse. But his painting became increasingly minimalist, and it went from being this abstract expressionist chaos in his 30s and 40s. And as he got older, it just became just so beautiful and simple. And I think the art world really loved it. I mean, like, everyone really looks at that last body of work and sees, like, maybe that's who he really was.
Okay, so one more question that I wanted to touch on is, you're in the unique situation where it's not just leaving something behind. You share children with this person, and I wonder how that changes your hopes for how you'd like to move forward through this really intense experience. And it could be too soon to think about that, but
no, I mean, I think even when you're in a relationship that's maybe not working, you're thinking about, you know, those things. And then when it finally comes to the point where you're, all right, you know, you're moving on, you realize that, like, you always are going to be connected to this person that you made these masterpieces with. And it's important to always, you know, children are the most important thing in this world. It's cliche, but they're the future. And you look at some of the most amazing people and that have done the most amazing things in this world, and often they come from troubled backgrounds. You know, maybe they were adopted and, you know, lived with this feeling of rejection their whole life. You realize, like, all the stuff, bad stuff that happens to you as an adult affects your children, but ultimately they're going to be okay. I think kids are amazingly resilient, actually, and their ability to survive chaos is because they haven't lost that, like, joy, that real joy. Their ability to survive chaos is just unbelievable. You know, things that would wreck an adult's life would just not even affect a child. And when they're young enough, like, my kids are really young, you know, you think about what you really remember in life, and, you know, when you're 5 years old, do you really remember your parents being in love? Do you really remember, you know, that sunset where it just, you don't remember anything hardly. You remember, like, maybe a sandcastle or, you know, some vacation or some random thing, but you don't really have any concept of your parents, what's going on in their life. I certainly didn't. As I get older, I started to realize, like, what their problems were and stuff. But when you're little, it's just, you know, they're like heroes, superheroes.
It seems like more of a texture. Like, I remember a sports coach, Yay Sports, one time saying, who remembers any of the games? You spent the most hours practicing. That's what you remember. If you conjure a memory, it's whatever you did the most hours doing. So it seems like this texture of whatever the overarching ambiance of a situation was.
Yeah, my friend Katie told me, she gave me the best advice. She said, you know, Travis, you need to just focus on three things you can do with your kids, like, every time you see them, that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. They're going to talk about that thing when you're, like, you know, old, and they're going to say, Dad, do you remember that thing you used to do? Do you remember, you know, you need to just focus on those things with your boys, because all the other stuff, you know, like the emotions and, you know, worrying about this and that, and you know, like, your kids are only, they're going to remember you for, like, these simple, beautiful things you do with them, you know, whether it's just playing catch or just, like, you know, wrestling or acting like some weird monster you've made up. You know, just do it. Just keep doing it over and over again so they don't forget. And it makes them happy, that one simple thing. They don't want any more than that.
And it gives you a script for times when you feel completely lost or ungrounded too, I feel like.
Yeah, you can go into this
Not
world.
Not that it's a recitation, but that it's just something you can grasp onto that's sure and repetitive.
Yeah, you need to grasp onto something when your life's falling apart all around you. And sometimes just one thing, just one joyful thought can get you through a day. And then, you know, you get better and better, you know, more joyful thoughts. But when things are really tough, yeah, you just try to focus on something and just try to let it all just spin around you and just focus on this one, you know, perfect thing, even though it's almost impossible to do it. It helps. I think for me, that perfect thing is my painting. Even though I'm not a perfect painter, I've always come back to that when I'm in a place where I can't make sense of the rest of the world. It's because I can control that in my life. I can control what I'm doing with the paint for the most part.
You kind of touched on the fact that your painting put you in touch with what might happen, or not to say the future, but like you were tuning into the energy of what was coming your way before it happened through your painting. Mm-hmm. How is that?
In a very literal way, I actually painted some things before I moved here that predicted a lot of things that were going to happen to me in my life. I in 2001, I was living in Kansas City, Missouri. In 2001, 9/11 happened. And, you know, I became really obsessed with this like image of like an invasion and this war, like we were going to get invaded. So I made this painting that was a group of parachuters that were descending upon these mountains with this river running through it. And there was these three pyramids in the background too. And I don't really know what those mean still, but maybe I'm starting to figure it out now. But everything else in that painting, years later, I made a painting when I got to Jackson that had a group of paragliders in it. They were paragliders soaring over the town of Jackson with Flat Creek running through it. And I never realized that I'd made this painting before until somebody pointed it out to me one day when they were looking through my old images. I'd forgotten about it, and it just blew my mind because that painting became this thing that has changed my entire life. I wouldn't be at all where I'm at today if I hadn't made that painting. Literally everybody in town knows me from that piece. You know, I've become conscious of things I'm painting now, like wondering when I get an idea, a symbol pops up. Is this like the burning RV? Is this predicting something? I painted a horrible painting a few years ago that I've only shown a few people because it's so depressing. It's of a school bus accident. That's a school bus that has fallen off a bridge or something and is half submerged in an icy lake. There's ice floating everywhere and the bus is on its side. And then when I did that, I didn't know why I did it. I was maybe on Google too much, looking at disaster imagery, going through some personal stuff. We lost a house, a foreclosure, and my American dream had kind of gone up. But the bus image, I never really understood why that came to my mind. But, you know, I'm going through the possibility now of maybe not seeing my children anymore or in the way I saw them before, basically having no contact with them when it comes to their schooling or their school year, just seeing them on the weekends for a few hours. And in a way, I think I might have predicted that in my life. And so I'm wondering what's happening now, like the paintings I'm making now. I worry. I don't know that I've made any paintings since the paraglider painting that have had a positive outcome necessarily, where I predicted something great. I guess I should start painting some, I don't know, birthday parties or something.
Well, I guess they say that we dream to prepare for the worst, what our bodies will have to like jump up and get into action for. And, you know, maybe it's the same. It might be preparing for certain apocalypses, but
yeah, it's definitely like a dream.
It gets you ready.
Yeah, it does. I never heard that a dream prepares you.
I think the context was, you know, if you were a caveman, you would dream about the hunt and the carving of the animal that you get or the attack of another group of people. And then they were finding that people who played a video game, then dreamed about it and played it again, were immensely more prepared to handle the challenges of the video game. And so I was thinking of that, but
it's true. I mean, I definitely think you can have waking dreams as well, where I believe creative ideas come from, you know, when you're in a state where you can, when you put enough time into something, when you go to the studio every day, or if you're a writer, if you say, I'm going to write every day and you're going to set time aside, this is going to be my time, I'm going to do this, you open yourself up to something that I think is like, you become almost like in this dream state after a while. You know, like, you just are a channel. It may not happen the first few weeks. It may not happen for a few months, but if you show up every day, it will happen. I get
ass in the chair.
Yes. You have to actually do it. You cannot just say, tomorrow I'm going to do it. When you get into this, when you do it all the time, you get into that dream state easier. And I believe that's where really great art comes from. I think people that make something that seems so simple, like a song that's just like, you know, three notes or three chords and the perfect lyrics. And it's, you know, we've had guitars for like whatever, 1,000 years or 100 years. And we're still coming up with stuff that is so simple. We haven't exhausted it. You have to, the people that are making that kind of stuff are like really in tune with possibilities, I guess, because they practice a lot or they fail a lot. They're not afraid of that possibility of failing. So you know, when you don't worry about that, a lot of times stuff just happens that you never expected.
Or you have a shortcut through all the meaningless babble that normally occupies your mind space.
Yeah, because you can't think of anything with all that crap. And again, going back to the inner child thing, you know, you have to really get rid of all that stuff and commit to that like experience. You have to want that in your life too. You have to, you know, it's like when people work out, people that work out all the time, that they're obsessed with their bodies. They want to be physically perfect in a way. They want to be more perfect. Mm-hmm. Or they want to be like healthy maybe too, but that's not the kind of obsession I'm talking about. Like when you make art, it's more like eating, I guess. There's this thing that won't go away that you really have to stick something in there. Like you have to make something to satisfy this voice in your head, this urge. You have to just, you know, you've had an idea in the back of your mind. Like, where does that go? Like, oh, I've got this idea. I hear that all the time from people that aren't even artists or, you know, but like, it's in the back of your mind, right? But if you are constantly shoving that crap out of your mind every day, you are going to find some amazing stuff in there. That idea that was in the back of your mind, there's so much more to it. There's so much more. Like the human mind is capable of incredible stuff. You just have to do it all the time. It's definitely like a machine. You have to use it and oil it and like keep it running, or you just let it sit there forever. It's not going to work right.
Yeah. Well, in that way, it is like exercise or working out in a way. Well, let's put a pin in this conversation right now, just because we've got limited time on the air. But it was such a pleasure to have you guys here.
Well, thanks for having me. This is great therapy.
Thanks very much.
If anyone else needs therapy, call me. Notes for the Apocalypse. We're all struggling. You are not alone. This is KHOL. Ready, buddy, baby.